Would you like the idea of diving freely underwater with no cage, swimming amongst sharks? Perhaps you could imagine yourself face to face with a tiger shark, a great hammerhead, an oceanic white tip, or maybe a bull or lemon shark. For some people, that sounds like the ultimate in adventure holidays and extreme experiences, the chance to meet the ocean's most notorious predators up close and personal. Well, scuba adventures based in South Florida offer just that kind of dive, but for their founder, Jim Abernethy, bringing people together with sharks is about far more than providing just an adventure. He is a passionate conservationist working tirelessly to highlight the plight of the world's shark population. With over 100 million sharks killed each year, the majority for their fins to be used in Chinese food and medicine. Jim has also made many films, written books, and is a leading underwater photographer, bringing glimpses of marine life to the world that most of us will never experience firsthand. Another trick up Jim's sleeve is to befriend sharks, and as you will hear, the results have sometimes been astonishing. This week on Boat Radio for Skipper's Review, Sarah O'Kelly met Jim Abernethy on his boat. As they talked, Jim showed Sarah highlights from some of his underwater films, and he began by remembering one of his most remarkable underwater encounters.
So in 2003, this huge shark swims in, which we very soon thereafter named Emma. And she was, despite her big size, she was really calm and cool, collected. Over the period of the next 10 years, I would remove 3 hooks from this shark by giving it affection. I gave it affection every time I saw it. Basically, when it came towards me, I'd rub my fingers together, and then I would rub its head. The shark clearly got a bond of trust with me and followed me around like a dog. Now, at the time, it was a little bit upsetting to me that when I left, the shark would leave. I mean, I run shark expeditions, and I didn't want anyone to know that the main subject that they all wanted leaves when I get out of the water. So I didn't acknowledge that that was what was going on. A brilliant producer was making another series of shark tapes called Adventures of Captain John with his brother John. George Schellinger is the producer I'm talking of. And he came up from one of the dives. He said, Jim, what's going on with you and that shark? There's something going on. I need to do a story on that. And I said, there's nothing going on. In those days, I was afraid that people would realize that, you know, when I get in the water, I have to stay in the water till the end of the day, or it's not going to be as good for them. Now, Emma got more and more adjusted and used to people, and eventually it doesn't really matter who's down there. She's going to stay around. But when she recognizes the crew or myself, she stays, and it's really, really great. But what I was doing is I was rubbing her head and giving her affection. And years later, I was in a very difficult situation. The Taiwanese had put boats, commercial fishing boats, they'd already been approved for a permit to take 5,000 sea cucumbers a day. They had their airline shipping seafood back to Asia, and they just applied for a permit to take sharks, and I was desperate. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to lose Emma and all of her friends. I've got to do something. So I thought, I'm going to contact George and make a film, which wound up being called This Is Your Ocean Sharks. I called a tremendous, well-respected individual in South Florida and large sections of the world, Guy Harvey, Dr. Guy Harvey, and Weiland, the ocean artist, to be the co-stars of the film, knowing that Emma would steal the show. And I told George that I would give him something that the world wouldn't think possible. What I was going to do, the scene that you can watch here, is that I was going to make it look like the shark was actually giving me affection. But the truth is, the shark's not giving me affection. The shark wants affection from me. But by me rubbing its head and then pulling its head up to my head so I could remove the hooks, if I don't rub her head, she always swims directly to my head. And this is how I get the hooks out, which is so strange. So the money shot in This Is Your Ocean Sharks, I actually filmed with my left hand, because every time George got too close, Emma was a different animal. She was worried, what's going on?
Yeah.
So I filmed it with my left hand, and it looks like the shark is kissing me twice in a row. And years later, one of my favorite sponsor, which is Ocean Technology Systems, they make the world's finest underwater full-face communication mask. This company has this really great mask, and they sponsored my nonprofits, Operation Blue Pride and Wildlife Voice, separately, both of them, with product, which is really great for me because now I can narrate what you're watching while it's happening underwater, which we're going to do some of that.
Yeah,
we're going to use that equipment to do our live broadcast. But the nice thing that it's kind of strange thing that happened. Renee, who's the owner of the company, her father built all the stuff, and she's running the company. She called me one day and said, "Jim, we just watched This Is Your Ocean Sharks." I said, "Oh, that's great. What did you think?" And I said, "Well, I think that you need to do the Emma Kiss scene with our mask. Can you do that this week on your next trip? Because that'd be great for our mask." And I said, "Well, I can't. You see, Emma's on vacation. She's not due back for a couple more months. Would it be all right if I used another tiger shark? Does it have to be her?" And she said, no, I don't want you to do that. I don't want you to get hurt or anything. I just, you know, would like that scene with Emma." I said, "I'm not going to get hurt. All the sharks are the same. They're sentient creatures. They love affection. And once they're trained to get affection so that I can remove the hook, they all
swim." Has anybody else realized this?
I believe there's other people in the shark world that are now trying to follow in my footsteps.
Mm-hmm.
And I know my crew is crazy about it. They go down there and make friends. Like, the most profound response was, you know, they hear me talking about the sentient side of sharks to the guests on the boat. But this is back in the early days before we had, now we have 6 different species that we've documented that are all like this. And they're all in the top 10 most dangerous sharks, all 6 of these. But Jason Harvey came up from a dive and he said, "Wow, I can't believe it, Jim. You're absolutely right." I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "I just made friends with whatever shark it was, and I can't wait to get back in." Mm-hmm. He no longer was there as the chef. He was there as a friend of sharks. And that's the guy that's in the Hannah Tiger video. That's mm-hmm. Jason Harvey. But this scene that's in the This Is Your Ocean Sharks, which I'm so glad that we did that movie 6 years ago. But here's the actual scene. Now, Sean Heinrichs is, when you're watching This Is Your Ocean Sharks, so 4 people paid for This Is Your Ocean Sharks. Sean is the only one that paid for it, but he's not in the film. It's a conservation film. There's no sensationalism. It's a beautiful film. We won the McGill Free Freeman IMAX. Yeah. But what he is he is, in my eyes, he's the world's best undercover endangered animal flyer. What he does is when some country says, "We're not killing sharks," he flies in alone without anyone getting detected on the radar, and then hires a boat, goes down the coast until he finds out where they're really slaughtering them. It's pretty easy to see. As he said, did you see her with the sailfish or other animals yet?
I don't think so.
So, you'll see this in just a minute. But what he does is, he'll, when the list came out of the world's worst shark finning countries, he flew to the Taiwanese through a fit. They were ranked 4th worst. So they held a big press conference. And of course, very few sharks killed that day with all these hundreds of boats. Sean flew in. By the way, this is Shredder. This is a nurse shark. And this nurse shark is listed on the shark attack files as the 11th most dangerous shark based on unprovoked attacks. Now, this unprovoked attacks, I'm going to send you all this stuff so you'll see it, but this unprovoked attacks, and I thought, how in the world? We read about it. Whoa. It was just on TV last night, where a guy speared a fish, and then the shark came after him, and it was a nurse shark. It was on ABC News. I watched it last night. Now, if that shark would have bit him, he would have been listed as an unprovoked attack. In fact, you can catch a shark, put it on your boat, and if it bites you, it's still unprovoked. We can do no wrong. And so the shark attack files are not real because they have so many. So I took, I'm just going to make my point one more time. So I took that when I learned it was the 11th most dangerous shark, I thought, you know what, I'm going to make fun of them for the rest of my life. So what I did was I found this baby shark. It was only about this big. Many, you know, a decade ago. And for the next 6 years, I worked with this shark every week. I'd go over and I'd rub its head and give it affection with a hand signal. Okay, so now look. You're going to see a scene in just a second, and I'm going to stop it. Wait a second. Let me tell you what you're about to see. I'm on the right side. The shark's swimming away from me. I give it a hand signal just to see if I can get it to stop. It turns around and looks at me. I give it a hand signal again. I'll tell you when the hand signals are. Wait, you don't need the music. It's going to be right now. Okay, it's swimming away from me. It's right up to this scene. Right now, there's the first hand signal. Mm-hmm. It looks back at me there. I give it a second hand signal.
And it came right back. And just stopped right there.
Yeah.
Rub me, rub me.
Right?
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? This is 11th most dangerous species right there. 11th. And it's a nurse shark. You know nurse sharks are harmless, right? So there's so many examples. Like here is a Caribbean reef shark. This I did for the 60 Minutes of Australia, which is called Sunday Night. This girl here is famous in Australia. She's known as the Shark Girl. Or maybe it's Shark Chick or something. I'm not sure. But she's out to save sharks. What happened was the Australians, just to make sure you know what happened, the great white shark, or actually it's called the white shark, realistically. The white shark was biting people and they were dying. So the government thought they would fix the problem. They're going to start killing a bunch of sharks. Well, the sharks they're killing are tiger sharks. So she started protesting in Australia about them killing the sharks. And 60 Minutes got a hold of her and said, listen, we need to help you with this. We want to take you to a place where people swim with tiger sharks all the time so that they can see what they are. So they called me.
Mm-hmm.
So I expected her to be just smitten about sharks. And she showed up and she said, well, actually, I've never touched a shark. I don't believe in touching sharks. And I said, okay. Well, that makes my job even easier because I thought I had to make her friendly with a shark. Now I don't need to do that.
You don't have to worry about it.
Well, so I explained everything I just explained to you to the film crew from Sunday Night. And while she's listening, and 2 days later, she said, Jim, I'd really like to touch a shark.
Of course.
So I said, okay, here. We're under, she told me this underwater. So here, I grab a Caribbean reef shark by the dorsal fin. They have to keep swimming. So I'm holding it. Now, it's very much alive. By the way, if you were to search Caribbean reef shark human interaction, you'll find people that they feed them with a stainless steel suit on, and then the metal on their nose causes the shark to go into a trance, which is called tonic immobility. The shark becomes motionless, and they balance it on its nose and do all kinds of crazy things with it. But this is not tonic immobility. First of all, I'm not feeding it. I'm rubbing its head. That's all. If you look closely, I'm rubbing its head. It's very much alive. And there she goes and touches her first shark. Mm-hmm. But all I'm doing is giving the shark affection. And if it wants to swim away, which it does eventually, it will. Because I'm not restraining it. I'm just holding it up so it doesn't fall on the sand. But this shark cannot stop swimming for very long. Maybe 2 minutes at the most. Whereas if you look at other sharks regularly, see, here's a pile of scenes. So now what I've been doing actually for the last few years is try to get, the closer I can get someone to bond with a shark, the more likely I'm going to really change them. So what I do is I teach them video and image, how to capture data management, how to process the images, how to make a production. So all these numbered productions, all these numbered productions are while I'm teaching. And then at the end of the, here's two guests giving a lemon shark affection. Now, if you were to look through here, this was one of my more successful weeks. There's tiger sharks, sharks all over the place. And here's another person giving a lemon shark affection. Now, this shark can stop swimming. It's amazing, right?
Crazy.
It's crazy. Here's, now look, you'll love this one. There's a hammerhead, but
just past the hammerhead, this guy starts giving his shark affection. And what does the shark do? He moves closer, right? Just like your dog, right? Here, let me make this easier for you, right? And so this kind of thing, now here is...
Do you ever get dolphins that come along when you're down there with the sharks?
I run dolphin encounters.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I never asked you about that.
No, but I do. So here
do you
is...
enjoy that as much as the sharks? Or
no.
They're just...
No, everybody loves dolphins.
Yeah.
They don't need help as much as...
Yeah.
Actually, they do need help, but not like sharks. So look, here I'm trying to adjust the camera while I'm giving this lemon shark affection. And I'm looking around trying to see if I can get more of the guests to... This is one of my favorite sharks. This one's name is Star. So in 2 days, you can make friends with a shark to the point that the shark will follow you around. Here's proof. This is my girlfriend on her very first shark trip. And this is the shark that she's been working with for 2 days. She swims over to it slowly, or crawls over to it and starts rubbing it. And I finally move the shark and the camera into position so you can see what's really going on. The shark's just getting affection.
Mm-hmm.
And now another example. This is the same shark that I just mentioned, Star. And the same exact thing, except at first, if you watch this, at first, the shark is startled when it first touches her, and it starts to swim away, looks at her, and then goes, oh, wait a second, I'll take some of that.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's really mind-opening. I don't know how to even say it. No one would believe this, but I've got so much proof. Now, we just, you asked about dolphins. Here is my girlfriend on her first dolphin encounter in the Bahamas. And this dolphin right here is, I've known for a long time. She's actually passed several of her young into my arms when they were just born. Her name's Keikos, this one right here. But I don't want to interrupt this scene, but I'm trying to get her to just touch the dolphin one time so it knows you're not going to grab it. And then it will know that you're okay. So I just touched it. Watch what happens here. I'm trying to get Keikos to realize that she's very friendly and have the encounter of a lifetime. So here it goes. She's going to touch it right here. And there it is. That's all she needed. Now, watch. The dolphin slows down even more and says, okay, you're my friend. I'll let you touch me.
It's crazy.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's crazy. Wild animals are nice if you treat them nice. However, I had a dolphin trip. It was just dolphins. They're called the Crystal Dolphin people or something. Crystal Dolphin something. They're from Seattle. And they came on board. And I have two dolphin friends that are as nice as that, where they're showing me their kids. When they're born, proud moms, right?
Mm.
And here they are. This is Keikos, is the first one, and the second one is...
So do you do a lot of diving with your girlfriends?
Yeah.
That's nice that you both are into that.
Oh, yeah. Well, she started diving after I met her, but, yeah, she just went diving all weekend with me. But the dolphins are mean, like humans. For example, they take hostages for sex. Against their will.
Yeah, I've read something about that.
Yeah, that was the wild side of dolphins. I did that from. Okay, so here comes my two friends. The first one that you're going to see, it'll be obvious. It'll be looking right at me in just a second. This is Keikos. This is the first one right here. And the second one is shark bait because she was bit by a cookie cutter shark when she was really young. So the dolphins are really, really nice as well, but it's easy for everyone to love a dolphin because they have a permanent smile.
Mm-hmm.
Sharks have a frown. Not as easy to get the world to win over sharks, especially when companies like Discovery Channel have made millions projecting them as monsters, right?
Jim Abernethy talking to Sarah O'Kelly for Skipper's Review on Boat Radio. More tales of Jim's underwater adventures after the break.
Ah, this is Edward Smith from OPA Racing.
This is Ken Little, president of Glock Performance Boat Challenge.
Hi, this is Frank Pillsbury with Marine Max and the DFW International Boat Show in Dallas, Texas.
We explore all kinds of boating topics on Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show. Hi, I'm Captain Bob May. We get underway, making way, Saturday evenings here on Boat Radio.
This is Heather Lohe, Director of Membership for Boat US. Thanks for listening to Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show.
I'm Michael John, and each month on Boat Radio, I'll be looking at life on London's magnificent River Thames, from the dredgers emptying their cargoes of sand and gravel to the mudlarks combing the shore for lost treasures. I'll be meeting the people, visiting the places, and boarding the ships that work this mighty, muddy artery. So join me, Michael John, for Tales of the Thames on Boat Radio.
You're listening to Skipper's Review on Boat Radio. This week, Sarah O'Kelly is talking to Jim Abernethy, one of the world's leading shark divers, underwater filmmakers and photographers, and a passionate marine conservationist. Next, Jim picks up the story of Emma, the tiger shark he befriended.
At this point, I had known Emma about 6 or 7 years, and I'd already removed 2 hooks from her jaw, which were very easy. I know it's going to be pretty hard for anybody, and I don't expect them to believe this, unless, of course, they're actually on a trip with me. But these sharks become very much like domestic dogs, except they're a lot bigger. And certainly, the footage that's out, that you can see this, for example, the one on Tarantino, another big tiger shark that I removed 3 hooks from over a period of 5 months, and then comes back and chases me around to get her head rubbed, you know, without feeding it. Clearly, these are sentient creatures. A lot of this happened, or I should say accelerated tremendously, when my business partner, Sean Heinrichs, who is the star of Racing Extinction, asked me to help him with one of his films, which is the film working title is Why the Mermaid Cries. And basically, he filmed a mermaid to us who's an underwater performer. Someone that can hold their breath and do amazing things underwater. And Sean's vision for his film was to have a mermaid swim with all these different creatures, you know, sailfish, manta rays, whale sharks, dolphins, whales, all these different creatures, while she's upset because we're killing them all. And he said, Jim, the last chapter of the film has to be with large predatory sharks. Figure out how we can have our model, who's Hannah Fraser, dancing with tiger sharks. And at that point, I thought that, wow, I wonder if I could get my crew to start giving the sharks a hand signal and rub their head. Now, we were already progressed into a point where we're not feeding sharks, we're attracting them with fish, but it's actually, in my opinion, counterproductive to getting close-up encounters for lengthy periods of time when the sharks are actually looking to eat. So we switched that years ago, so we're just attracting sharks rather than feeding them. And now I asked the crew if they would give a hand signal to the shark when they see it, and then when it comes close enough, rub its head. And the transformation from that period forward was unbelievable. In fact, if you looked at the making of the film that we did, Tigress Sharks, with Hannah Fraser, it was a peaceful protest on the war on sharks, the shark culling in Australia. If you look at the making of, though, you see that I'm speaking with an unbelievable amount of confidence that we're going to pull this shoot off with no problems. When, if you think about it, we're going to put a girl underwater with no mask, no fins, no tank, no protection. She can't see, and we're going to have her dancing with tiger sharks. And how in the world would I ever be so confident? Well, the reason was because for the previous 9 months or so, my crew had been giving tiger sharks affection. And what happened was they just relaxed and calmed down, and it was unbelievable. It was really unbelievable that these sharks are now like the Labrador Retriever that comes into the house and lays on the couch. In fact, we went there, and the previous 7 weeks of charters, we had had no wild sharks. Now, a wild shark compared to what I call a supermodel, and I call them supermodels because I basically have a boat full of paparazzis trying to take pictures of the supermodel. And the bait creates what I call a runway. That's where the sharks go up and down, very similar to our human counterpart that works a runway with paparazzis taking pictures of her. So if you have a supermodel, that to me, that means a shark that is completely unconcerned with us damaging them.
They've lost fear of people completely because we're not chasing them or harassing them in any way. We're actually helping them. We remove parasites, we remove hooks. Mostly myself, but now my crew is starting to do this as well. The previous 7 trips we had all supermodels, so I was pretty confident that we were going to have all supermodels on Hannah Fraser's trip and when we made Tigris Sharks, and unfortunately a wild shark did show up. We had Matt Gutman on the boat from ABC News Worldwide, and he came up from the dive and said, "Oh my God, that's an aggressive shark. What are you going to do about that, Jim?" And I said, "Well, Matt, think about it. It was aggressive if you're a light or a strobe. And my strobes and lights don't bleed or complain. Basically, if you look at it from the shark's perspective, a wild shark came in and it's nervous. It doesn't know who we are, what we're there, or even if we're friendly. But it smells fish and it wants fish, and dead fish is white. So it's looking for things that are white. Well, that's strobes and lights. And it bit everything in the area while that was white." And I said, "Here's what we're going to do." And I said to the other crew member and the chef who hadn't been in the water, I said, "You guys get in the water right now and smother that shark with affection. Smother it." And we continued to smother that shark constantly, I'd say 12 hours a day.
How do you go about smothering the wild shark with affection?
Well, what you do is you get in between the scent of the fish. You get in essentially what I call the runway, where the shark swims directly following the scent. And when it comes in, you give it a hand signal. And when it comes close enough, you rub its head. And the shark goes, at first they're afraid. And after a short period of time, they're amazed. I'll give you the clip of the shark that we labeled Hannah Tiger, after Hannah Fraser. And
what about the gesture of putting your hand at? They don't mistake that for, like, your hand is white. They don't mistake that for...
Well, first of all, we cover up completely in black.
Oh,
we cover
see.
Everything white in black.
Okay.
The set of rules that I put in place to get the most out of our shark interactions is all the rules are designed to do 2 different things. One is to make sure that we don't look like anything they're looking for, dead fish. And the other one is to make sure that we don't do anything that is going to make this shark think we're going to harm it. We're not allowed to even swim after a shark.
So you stay, like, as you mentioned, like paparazzi, you all stay in a line?
Exactly.
Okay.
We stay in a line and let the sharks come to us. Movement from us, if you swim towards a shark, the shark looks at that as an aggressive posture and swims away. They don't want conflict. That's the best thing to do. In fact, I'm writing a book now, which will be my 4th book, on how to avoid being bitten by a shark. And that's one of the things in there. You know, because people, like, for example, there were some horrific shark mistakes in the Red Sea a while back. And I believe I know what happened. It's the hysteria of the mindless man-eating monster is so prevalent in 99% of the humans on the planet because they don't dive. They don't know what it's like. They believe what they see on TV.
It's out of your control. It's not something that you
correct.
Can see coming, so you fear it.
Right. And so if you, let's face the facts, my first shark encounter was a near-death experience. Even though I was very young at the time, I saw my first shark probably at the same time I had just seen Jaws, which was what?
I was going to ask you about Jaws.
In 75.
Yeah.
And
tell me about
I saw this shark and I swam. I was in the water, in shallow water, with my entire family. We're all snorkeling. Nobody's in the boat. And I saw my first shark and I swam as fast as I could. The shark was right behind me trying to get me the whole time. And then I got up on the boat and I turned around and my family is still in the water, in my mind, about to be consumed by a shark. And I said, "Dad, quick, get out of the water, shark." And my father put his head down in the water and he said, "Jim, it's a nurse shark. It's still underneath the ledge. It hasn't even moved." But in my mind, it had chased me back to the boat because that's what I thought sharks did. And that's the mentality of many people, the majority of the planet, still today. Where the truth is, if you swim away quickly from a shark, nurse sharks in a different category, but most sharks, they're predators. And predators, like land predators, if you run away, you look like prey. And they're going to go after you just to see what you are. Are you something that they eat? And I believe that's what happened to the people that were attacked, as they say, in the Red Sea. They didn't eat them. They bit them. And then they let them go because we're not part of their food chain. They don't want to eat us. It's a case of mistaken identity. So the best way to avoid being bitten by a shark, one of the best ways, is if you're in clear water, swim right at it. It's going to know you're not what it's looking for. If you're in murky water, though, that's not going to work because they don't know what you are. And splashing is one of the signs that endanger. I mean, animals, fish that are being killed, do in order to escape being caught. But we've diversed into a completely different.
But no, finish that. So you're in murky water. What do you do?
Well, let me go down this road. You see, to address this properly, I get interviewed all the time for shark attacks. For example, the North Carolina, South Carolina things that happened roughly about a year ago. I did a ton of interviews on that. And for several of them, I asked the reporter to do a little homework for me before they get there. And I did this because I noticed one of the first attacks, which was a girl, she was actually bitten twice. And they thought it was one shark, and I do not think it was one shark. I think it was two different sharks. But what in the world would make a shark bite someone? And here's what it is. And we are, as humans, we are confused. Let's use our own Palm Beach County as an example. Say you're with your family, and they want to go to the beach. You go down to, say, Juneau Beach or the Lake Worth Pier, and you notice that there's a sign there, and it says, no shark fishing. It sounds like a safe place. Then you look and you see a lifeguard. Wow, that is a safe place. No shark fishing and a lifeguard. So you put your family in the water there to swim and have an enjoyable day without realizing what's going on. You see, a fishing pier, to me, is a 24-hour shark dive. They use exactly the same bait, except they put it in all day and all night. Some of these fishing piers, like Lake Worth, I believe, are open all the time. But they have much better bait than we use, because as soon as you catch a fish, whether it's on a lure or a piece of fish that you caught on, is irrelevant. That fish, struggling for its life, emits an electrical stimulus and a vibration that we as humans cannot detect in any way. But sharks, if you think about what the shark does, that means there's an immediate source of food. All they need to do in order to be successful is beat all the other sharks to it. So think about the shark for a second from their perspective to fully understand why you should avoid swimming near anyone fishing, even just one person. Because to a shark, first of all, you have to bring in the topic of bait. Bait in South Florida is everywhere. You can buy it at gas stations, you can buy it at Costco, you can buy it at Sam's, at Walmart, you can buy it in some pharmacies, you can buy it in the grocery store, and of course you can buy it at fishing stores. Bait is everywhere. Anytime you go close to any bridge or any beach, if fishing is allowed, we're putting bait in the water. So we have a ton of bait that's put in the water all over the place, not to mention what 80% of all the boats that go out have bait in the water trying to fish. So the shark, in order to be successful, it has to do two things. Reproduce, that doesn't affect us, and spend less energy than it takes to get to its next meal. So under the influence of all this bait, majority of the time, it follows the scent of fish, and there's nothing at the end of the trail. So they swim very slowly towards that scent, just hoping that there's something there. But when they feel the presence of live, struggling fish, immediately that means there's a source of fish there, and all they need to do is beat the rest of the sharks to it. So they come in at full speed, and anybody that splashes the water or that is close proximity to that struggling fish, they're going to bite it real quick and then go, yuck! But it's already too late. It's labeled as a shark attack. The shark goes on to find the source of the sensory system overload and moves on. So avoid fishing at all costs, even if there's a lifeguard there.
Emergency the water time, fishing, it's all going to be kind of the same thing.
And let's face the facts. I mean, something that nobody thinks about, except someone like me. That sign, no shark fishing, at the base of all those piers. I've never seen a shark up by the road reading the sign. Yeah. I don't even know if they can read English. It's ludicrous. There's tons of bait there. Sharks are going to be attracted to it, regardless of the sign. It means nothing. That's there to dupe the public, which they assume is stupid enough to believe it. It's not true. There's sharks everywhere there.
Jim Abernethy talking to Sarah O'Kelly for Skipper's Review on Boat Radio. More tales of Jim's underwater adventures after the break.
Smartest long-tailed catch you'll find is ho way, ho way, you must done. She's a lady sailing of a salty time. Clear away the tackle, let the bull jive. Run to me, hey, rig a jig, she's a jaunting free.
We're living our dreams.
We're living simply and sustainably aboard a sailboat travelling the world.
We're visiting remote communities and raising awareness about the health of our oceans.
Patrolling the oceans for microplastic particles.
We're checking on the health of coral reefs and phytoplankton populations.
We're monitoring marine mammals and examining synthetic materials in fish.
We're Bass and Jamie Van Jones.
And we're proof that citizen science can save the world.
Hear all about our amazing adventures in salty times every week here on Boat Radio.
Stay salty.
You.
And the board of the ladies say, clear away the tackle, let the boat join run.
Earliest prehistory reveals mankind's innate connection to the sea. From boats of woven reed in Egypt, to Homer's black ships of the Trojan War, down to the naval battles of Greece, Rome, and every civilization since. I'm Brandon Huebner, and I'll present the history, archaeology, and literature that connect us with our past on the sea, all that on the Maritime History Program. Join me as we voyage down through the ages and witness the development of sailing, trade, and much more. The Maritime History Program, with me, Brandon Huebner, every Wednesday here on Boat Radio.
You're listening to Skipper's Review on Boat Radio. This week, Sarah O'Kelly is talking to Jim Abernethy, one of the world's leading shark divers, underwater filmmakers and photographers, and a passionate marine conservationist. Next, Jim continues the story of filming Hannah the Tiger Shark.
Back to what we were talking about, which was Hannah Tiger. 5 days is what we had to make that Tiger Sharks film. But this Tiger Shark, 5 days later, we filmed Hannah Tiger. There's one scene that's a minute and 35 seconds long where the tiger shark, which can swim anywhere it wants, is keeping its head within 4 feet of Jason Harvey, our chef, who's giving it a hand signal and then rubbing its head. It's unbelievable. It shows beyond a shadow of a doubt.
So she figured it out pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah.
The signal,
sharks love,
the contact,
love affection, just like dogs. And it's very sad that a large percentage of the population believes that animals that can't scream when they're being killed, including sharks, can't feel pain. It's so sad. I mean, we even cook fish that are still alive when we serve them. That's horrific. It's so barbaric. I feel embarrassed that I'm part of the species that's doing this. But I believe that the time right now is so important. Right now, I mean, if you look 5-6 years ago, one of the best hopes for future is marine protected zones, places where you're not allowed to kill anything. It gives our oceans a place of sanctuary where they can breed and try to repopulate the devastation we've already caused.
How much of an emergency situation are we in? I mean, how devastated is it right now?
Well, no better way to say it than to use the words of Dr. Boris Worm, who in 2007 published a report that said we will run out of fish to eat in 2048, roughly. We'll run out of fish to eat if we don't change our current consumption practices. That's a huge statement.
The amount that we're taking out, it's not reproducing fast enough to make up for the...
Our industrial fishing We've basically declared war on our oceans animals, and we are eradicating them at an unprecedented rate. We are very efficient predators, and we've taken past what they can predict. If you do a little work on this, you'll find, like, for example, one of the most expensive fish on the planet is tuna. Every year, the European Union says, okay, we can take 38 metric tons of tuna this year. And every year, we take almost double that. And we've been doing this for decades. And it never seems to change. All that changes is that the number of fish we have goes down and goes down and goes down. Look, it's over two decades ago, we ran out of cod. They used to say you could run across the cod. There were so many in the Northeast. Still, that cod has not come back, because we continue to fish relentlessly. As a species, if we're concerned about the future health of our planet, we need to protect the biodiversity and abundance of animals that we still have left. We're headed right now for the sixth extinction, this one caused by man. But we have the knowledge and the ability to correct it. The question is, will there be enough of us that want to make a difference?
So how are we going to get through to people, and how are you doing that right now? Are you doing it through nonprofit organizations, or you're doing it obviously through even just bringing people out is certainly a positive way to get people to think about sharks. But in the bigger spectrum, the shark fins, is that a huge area that can be hit to stop slaughtering them for that? Like, I read somewhere that the airlines are now refusing to transport the shark fins.
Well, I work with a bunch of nonprofits, and certainly there are tremendous nonprofits, and then there are ones that gather funding but just pay themselves. So doing your homework is certainly well worth it.
What are the main organizations that you're part of?
I support Wild Aid. Mm-hmm. Their shark campaign is the most effective, I believe, of all of the campaigns going on. But it's not enough to just support one. Mm-hmm. You know, these nonprofits find their niche on how they want to help the world. And if you agree with that niche that they formed, then you should help them. I believe that it's going to take an effort in all different levels. Education is the big one.
Do you talk to schools?
Oh, yeah. I do presentations all the time. In fact, this weekend I'm headed to SharkCon, a conference just about sharks, where 2 years ago I attended as a keynote, and I'll be there again this weekend. And I speak to schools, and I am the author and publisher of many different books, three different books so far that have all received awards for conservation. So you have to do it in a bunch of different ways. But another tremendous conservation effort is Pew Charitable Trust. They're one of my favorites as well. They essentially put whole teams in countries to try to get marine protected zones. When they first started, I believe the world had 0.4% of the world's oceans were in a marine protected status, marine protected area, what Sylvia Earle refers to as a hope spot. And I believe now we're over 2% of the world's oceans protected. To give you an example, 14% of our United States terrestrial is protected, but less than 2% of the world's oceans are protected. So we need roughly, scientists say we need to protect at least 30% of the world's oceans in order to get it to rebound.
What about the politics of it all? Is it worth going to Washington, and I don't know what areas you could hit up there to get them to listen?
Well, it's worth it to hit all these areas. Mm-hmm. There are nonprofits that target politics. Now, America, sadly, is the seventh worst shark finning nation in the world. And Florida is the worst state in the United States. That's where I live. Wow, this is really difficult. While the state itself has protected our waters, the problem is it only goes out 3 miles. NOAA I believe I've been told that their board has commercial shark fishermen on it. It is trying to overturn, although they just failed, the 10 states that have already banned all types of shark fin transportation, selling. Everything related to shark fin is not allowed in 10 states at the moment. But NOAA, our federal agency responsible for protecting our offshore resources, was actually, their law says that once you go off 3 miles, you're allowed to kill 34 sharks per trip. And that's happening, and that's why Florida is one of the worst states for shark finning. That helps make United States the 7th worst nation.
Who has the shark fin stuff in Florida? Do they export it?
Oh, yeah. The shark fin industry is a huge multi-million dollar industry. If you imagine you're a fisherman, and for example, the beautiful whale shark, an animal that doesn't attack man, the dorsal fin alone is worth $50,000. All you need to do is get it off the animal. Can you imagine? So there is a video online of a whale shark that's still alive on the beach with no fins. They took all the fins off of it and left it there. I love WildAid's campaign. Their idea is to follow the footsteps of Nike. They find someone that's extremely well-respected in the area. In China, they chose Yao Ming, Jackie Chan, and many of the world's Olympic gold medalists. And they talk to them about the problems and see if they'll help them make a public service announcement. My very next trip on this boat is with WildAid to do an underwater Asian wedding public service announcement, as well as an Asian business meeting, both underwater with sharks. It's nonprofits like this that are extremely creative. They make the public service announcement, and then they get airtime donated to them and air it where it needs to be aired. And I believe that WildAid is probably the strongest nonprofit stopping the demand for shark fin soup in Asia, because that's where they target it, and they're very, very effective. But it's going to take a myriad of...
It's been like a tradition in Asia for a long time, right, the shark fin soup. So
yes.
That would be like telling Irish people not to eat potatoes anymore. It's going to take a lot of time.
Well, it was considered to be food only for the wealthy. The problem is we have a lot of very wealthy Asians now. So now it's mainstream. And now that the demand has been cut severely, they say it's down 60 or 70%. Now. And I think a lot of that has to do with the simple fact that shark is poisonous. If you look at shark and all large animals in the ocean, carry high levels of mercury, which is not just a poison, but it's also a terrible poison. The only way you can get rid of it is to pass it on to your children. One of the few poisons that can get through the membrane that protects your children doesn't work with mercury. So it's the awareness that's coming about because of all of this. I mean, there's really no reason to kill a shark. You can't eat it and be healthy. Why? They said a 4-ounce shark project, another prominent nonprofit in Europe, did a bunch of testing on shark meat and found that a 4-ounce steak of blue shark has more than the allowable limit of mercury that you can eat according to the United States. Just one 4-ounce piece. So why in the world would you want to have a fishery for an animal that's poisonous to serve to your friends or yourself? So that kind of education that's coming out is really what's necessary. You know, my generation was raised thinking that the sea was an inexhaustible marine resource, and certainly my generation is responsible for killing it. I'm hopeful that our children will be raised with much more awareness about nature so that we can do much more to protect it while we still have it here. If we don't, you know, what we do in the next 10 years will predicate what our planet looks like for the next 10,000.
Okay. Thank you so much, Jim. I really appreciate all your time. That was amazing talk. Lots of information. And I look forward to watching your videos online and YouTube, and you have some various books that you've written. Tell us the names of your books that you've...
Well, I partnered with Jen Nolan to write a series of books, two different. One is for everyone, and that's the close-up series. So far we've done sharks up close and turtles up close. Very happy that my shark book was actually determined by some lobbyists in California to be the best shark conservation book out. And a soap company in England paid for 840 of them to be distributed to our U.S. senators and state representatives, and it was actually read on the Senate floor, which was a big milestone for me because as a conservationist, that's why I wrote the book, and that's why I self-published it as well, so that I could better control where they're going for good causes. But we also have a children's book. We've only have one book in that series so far, and that one's called The Secret of Pig Island. It's the beautiful story about a pig that swims in crystal clear water. Unlike most children's books, it's pictures rather than graphics, because these pigs actually do swim in crystal clear water. And it's the star of the book, his name's Plato. As the name implies, he's a brilliant pig that realizes that his species, pigs, are very messy, and he got his own species to clean up the island. But he found another species on the planet, humans, that need to take care of their own island, Earth. And Plato speaks in rhyme. It's a beautiful book that will grab you when you read it. So I'm very happy about that. And Jen and I are pushing to put out more books, as well as my own staff, to push out more films that are properly representing sharks and other ocean creatures. So it's wonderful.
You're a man of many, many talents.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you so much.
Jim Abernethy talking to Sarah O'Kelly for Skipper's Review on Boat Radio. And you can find out all about Jim's life and work, and you can even book one of his shark dives at scuba-adventures.com. That's scuba-adventures.com.